Hey guys, Alex here. This episode is a little weird due to the fact that I am at Dallas Toy Fair launching my company's new tabletop gaming line. I am unable to be in LA, and so me and Ben were unable to record the episode for this week. So instead, we are releasing the very tail end of our 5-hour long top 100 episode. So it'll be the top 20 cards in Modern's history. Please check that out. It's really cool. And you don't have to listen to all of the other 80. If you want to see some of this cool stuff I launched, make sure to follow me on Twitter. I am at Kes Wiley. Make sure to follow the podcast at the MMCast. Make sure to follow Ben at Ben Bateman Media. Make sure to check all of our friends at the Command Zone out on rockdump.com, which is where we are as well. And check out our YouTube channel, all the cool stuff that we always talk about every week. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week when we start releasing new episodes on our regular scheduled program. Thanks a bunch. Bye.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Moth.
Counting down from the top 20 of the set, 100 cards of all time.
Let's do it.
Get hyped.
Hyped. Hyped.
Hype, 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 hype. All
right. I got it right here. I got it right here on my phone. Number 20 on the all-time modern list. We have a card that was a favorite in the deck I was building all last summer, Superior Burning Cocoa. A card originally that Kessler had even higher, believe it or not, on his list. I had to convince him to move it down. Remarkably powerful card, newer to the format, not identified immediately at printing as a modern powerhouse, but the replacement for one of the most powerful cards ever printed in modern. 4 mana, collected company.
Bum, bum, bum.
Instant speed, 1 green, 3 colorless. Reveal the top. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may put up to 2 creature cards with converted mana cost 3 or less from those into play. This is a combo enabler. It allows you to search and put in cards that allow you to accelerate your Malyra Kitchen Finks combo.
How many decks off the top of your head can you say exist because collected company exists?
A lot.
Elves. Abzan Cocoa, Bant Cocoa,
Cocoa
Naya
Zoo,
Cocoa,
Cocoa Zoo,
Cocoa Zoo,
Superior Burning
Superior
Cocoa. there's all the weird variations the brews people come up with that are playing with Scab Ruinators and Mere Superiors. That's the thing. Like, there's various versions that show up.
Right. So, like, the depth that this deck has kind of gotten to
Cocoa Merfolk
by itself
thing.
Is insane for, like, a card that came out a year and a half ago. And
Dominant and Standard.
Yeah, Dominant and Standard. Like, this is definitively a format-defining card at this point. Super strong. Super happy he's there. I don't know how much more can be said other than the fact that it's just really, 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 really
I
good.
Love it. I'm a really big fan of it. It's, like, one of my favorite cards. I think it's super fun to play with. Yeah, I think it's just really powerful. Shall we keep moving down the list?
Yeah.
The best counterspell on the list, the best counterspell in Modern, Remand.
I knew it.
1 blue, 1 colorless, instant, counter-target spell. If that spell is countered this way, return it to your opponent's hand. Draw a card. It's a tempo counterspell that is more commonly played now, even in Modern, than even Mana Leak.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it is after turn 3, the magic doesn't matter anymore. So Remand's decent because trying to...
magic doesn't matter anymore, huh?
Drawing a card is really good. The versatility of being able to return a thing from your hand that they countered is always a fun thing to do. And counter mirrors, like, it's such a versatile card. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's never going to do something slightly different. I love Remand. Remand's great.
It's one of my favorites. It just feels so good to cast, you know? It's been good ever since it was in Ravnica. It's innovative, powerful, well designed. I was talking about this earlier. I love the design on Remand. I think it's a very elegantly designed card. The FNM foil of this is one of my favorite promo foils. It's awesome.
Remand isn't a counterspell. It's a cantrip. From the chat.
I have a stamped one of these that I got that I drafted in my MM15 day 2 draft when I was drafting with Paulo and Paul Rietzel. That was my
from the Modern Masters.
Yeah, in like the end of the tournament, it was like Paulo and Rietzel and one other guy that I recognized, then 4 people I didn't know, and I played like I drafted blue red elementals and I drafted a copy of this. So I have like the little star, the little like Grand Prix star on it.
So someone mentioned remanding your own spells the reason that they'll say it's better than Cryptic, but I will respond to that saying, Crypticking your own Snapcaster Mage
Yeah, it's so, super sweet.
All right. All right. Next card.
I still prefer Remand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why it's higher on the list.
Okay. Moving down the list, we have number 18, a card that was banned in Modern.
Number 18. Banned in Modern.
Another card that was missed in Modern for a short period of time before it was picked. That feels like it's the story with like so many cards, actually.
Now, I thought I knew what you were going to say.
One green, Phyrexian mana, three colorless, artifact.
It was pretty good in Modern.
Birthing Pod. It took a little while.
It took a little while for it to be known as the best deck that it was, because I think that's because it was the most difficult card in the format. I also think it took a while to figure out the exact list, because it's like, the problem with Birthing Pod, building a Birthing Pod deck, is like, coming to the point of knowing what your deck should be doing is so complicated, because literally every slot matters. It could be anything. You can play any creature and can get it, theoretically. So like, Birthing Pod, obviously one of the most Modern defining cards ever.
It was around for a while too. It was legal for quite a while. It didn't. This wasn't one season. It just ended up that there was the one season that Treasure Cruise was legal, and that Pro Tour, right? That Pro Tour was just straight up like Abzan, Birthing Pod, and Blue Red Delver. That was like the whole Pro Tour, and I think that was also where Amulet Bloom made such an impact. Did Summer Bloom get kicked off this list without me noticing? Did I just agree to let it go?
Yeah,
you jerk.
Yeah, Summer Bloom doesn't know. It like for a year maybe it was like a deck that was good, but like I don't even think that's the best card in that deck. We have other cards from that deck on that list, but back to Birthing Pod. It's interesting because Treasure Cruise wrecked the format by itself. Like it showed up completely, Delve completely changed the face of the format. Except Birthing Pod was still the best deck in the format.
Yeah,
it still ended up with Birthing Pod, because they got Siege Rhino, and it just became such an insane machine of just, like, value town that, like, was so hard to deal with that it got banned out of the format. I will say to this day, though, that the GPs before the ban list announcement were the most diverse Grand Prix top 8s in the history of Modern.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, one Treasure Cruise Delver deck. It's when you kind of left to the top 32, it got kind of fell by the wayside, but, like, Merfolk, Birthing Pod, Delver, Scapeshift, Twin, and like two other decks that I'm not even thinking of were the top eight. And that's like eight different decks, and that rarely happens. Okay.
Yeah.
Affinity, probably.
Yeah, Birthing Pod.
I think
was
Affinity
great.
Was really bad.
Birthing Pod was great, and Birthing Pod also had a lot of variety. You could do a lot of fun things. In the end, it was those Abzan ones were the ones that people played, but I mean, you could do a lot with it.
We mentioned earlier, Kiki Pod was like the other deck that, like, literally, if you untapped with one creature in play, you probably won the game. Creature in Birthing Pod.
There was a lot of fun things that I liked a lot. Like Birthing Pod Phantasmal Image was one of my favorite things to combine together because you could turn like a bird into a clone. I loved being able to turn Kitchen Finks into something awesome and then have Finks come back and then like activate your township.
Well, I loved having Kitchen Finks in play, sacking a bird, getting a Phantasmal Image, making a Kitchen Finks.
Yeah.
So you can sack the Kitchen Finks as the thing to get something else. Or like, yeah, there's so many cool things.
There's awesome stuff. I mean, that's the thing. It's the saddest part about Birthing Pod leaving was that there was so much play.
Metamorph or...
Yeah, there was so much play to the deck. It was such an interesting deck, and the design was so cool. It's actually, while some bannings like Second Sunrise are, I think, good, this is one of those bannings that really kind of made me sad because it wasn't even like Splinter Twin.
I think Birthing Pod and Splinter Twin both are cards that got hit, and Bloodbraid Elf, for that matter, are all three cards that I can see eventually coming off the ban list. Like, were mistakes based on Pro Tour-ness.
Yeah, and Twin to me is the one where I'm just like, there's no getting around how powerful that's going to be. Pod was like, and Twin had a lot of play to it. I guess you're right in both cases. Let's keep moving down the list.
Yeah.
Number 17, guys, the best card out of Dark Ascension, Lingering Souls. The anti-electrolyze.
Yeah, I mean, like, since the format was created, Lingering Souls has been a big deal. I mean, like, part of that is just how good it is against and with Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that A, Liliana can't beat this card, and B, when you have a Liliana and you, like, it's the reason Abzan, like, the Abzan version of Junk, in my opinion,
right,
named, is good, is because Lingering Souls exist. Like, we, you know, there are other cards we've mentioned. Gavinny Township is insane with Lingering Souls.
Right.
Their entire archetypes, Black-White Tokens, is a deck, and purely off of the back that Lingering Souls is a nuts card. I mean, like, there are other token cards. We don't have Bitter Blossom on this list. Bitter Blossom isn't in the top 100.
Yeah.
It hasn't done a whole lot. Lingering Souls, on the other hand, is insane.
Yeah. It's been good forever. And like you just said, it's good against so many things. Mm-hmm. It's such a great main deck and sideboard card. It's, yeah, I mean, tokens, and it's good against Affinity. Well, it's good against Infect.
And something that people always kind of forget, and one of the reasons, like, Pia and Kira Nalar is a playable card in this format, because making 1/1 flyers is so good because it stops Infect and Affinity in their tracks. Like, Affinity less so because they'll just attack into them, but it's still a wall that you're getting through. Like, Infect can't beat Lingering Souls. It's so hard for them.
Here's something I will say. If there was another version of Goblin Electromancer, like if there was a functional reprint of Electromancer, if there was two of those that existed, I've wanted to build the Electromancer turn two into Lingering Souls flashback Lingering Souls on turn three deck for so long with Rally the Peasants as the win con, and you play like Guide or Nakato on turn one, so that basically like you're like playing like turn two, I make 4 1/1s to go along with my 2/2. Turn five, play a third, or sorry, turn four, play a fourth land, and now I play Rally the Peasants, flashback Rally the Peasants, and attack for 12, 16 or something. Attacking for like 16 on turn four. I've wanted to build that deck forever. The problem is the closest thing you can get is Stormscape Familiar, which only reduces the black half of Lingering Souls. Or no. Stormscape Familiar reduces both halves, right? Because it's a, or does it? Do you know?
No.
Stormscape Familiar, the blue flyer 1/1 for two that was in Time Shifted.
Wait.
Yeah, Stormscape Familiar,
and it was Time Shifted.
Yeah, it was Time Shifted. So it reduces your instants and source. Black spells you play and white spells you play cost one less to cast.
Oh, I didn't know that. I know there's the black one that makes blue and red spells cheaper.
Yeah, there was.
It's not modern legal.
Stormscape. I'm pretty sure there's a reason that I could never. Yeah.
This is a tangent. Let's
right here this card. So here's my question for you. Lingering Souls is a white spell. Does the flashback make it black, or is it still a white spell?
Still a white spell.
Got it.
Well, it's still.
So it still works. You could still play this on turn two with Electromancer.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make some of the other spells. Like,
and now you're playing blue, so.
Well, it's already like a zoo deck, because you're already playing like Nakadal and all.
You want a red spell that does that.
But you're already playing Electromancer.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's keep moving.
All right, next card.
Next card on the list, past Lingering Souls, number 16. We've been talking about it all day. Kitchen Finks. Hybrid green, white, hybrid green, white, one.
This is one of the, like, oof. It's crazy how good Kitchen Finks is.
And it's been good ever since Standard.
Yeah, like.
Every format.
You would think this card wouldn't be good in an Eternal format, or a format the size of Modern. But
it's
like,
so good.
It, like, it beats down, it gains life against burn, it blocks creatures, it goes infinite in, like, three different ways.
It's an unbelievable card, yeah.
Yeah, like, and, you know, as we said, once we get to the 20, like, these are all multi-deck format, multi-format all-stars.
Yeah.
Like, multiple decks play Kitchen Finks. Multiple. Like, I remember back in the day when people were debating between Kitchen Finks and Garrosh Messenger at a Jund.
Yeah.
And it's just like, obviously Kitchen Finks was the correct choice because I haven't seen a Garrosh Messenger seed play in a long time. This card is very good. Like,
card's
like,
insane.
Like, good with Gavinny Town. Like, all the things you just mentioned with Lingering Souls, Kitchen Finks times two. Like,
yeah.
On top of that, Birthing Pod. On top of that, Collected Company. Like,
it's good against insanity. Burn. It's like just really good.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, yeah. It's, I mean, again,
good against Lightning Bolt.
It's funny that as we get closer and closer to the top of this list, there's going to be, I feel like, less and less to say about the cards because we've talked about them so much. So I guess we'll move on to number 15. Bob Mayer's Invitational card, Dark Confidant.
All right.
One black, one colorless, 2/1 human wizard. At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. If it's you and you put that card in your hand and lose that much life equal to its casting cost.
So something on Dark Confidant, and kind of in reference to like the Cranial Plating Affinity and the way things are rated, really people should take these as 10 blocks. Like, yes, we're counting them down. We're saying this one's slightly better than this one in that group of 10. But like, when it comes down to it, the 10 cards in this section of the top are like all insane.
Like, every one of them.
Every
totally
one of them.
Totally nuts.
Like, every single card, I'm just like, oh yeah, this card's so good.
They're all just like good stuff cards.
We talk about, you know, we've been talking about the cycle of two drops. So this is the black one. And
yeah.
He's really good. And the other ones that are legal in the format are all higher than him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So like, two mana, like he draws you cards in Jund. He's the reason you still have gas in Jund. He's your card draw engine. He's very good.
He's been a little less played the last year or two. I think he's still really good in Jund. As Jund has become better, he's better. Also,
there's a point where he fell out a little bit of favor because Tassigar became the premier like four drop card draw engine-y top end to Dredge or to Jund and or Junk when Junk was better than Jund.
Yeah.
And he fell out by the wayside because of that reason. But since kind of Kalidas came in to play, and Pia and Kieran Nalar were there, and then soon to be maybe this new Chandra or other cards, he's kind of come back in favor because of the fact that you're no longer doming yourself for 9.
Yeah, right. That definitely makes a huge difference. I've seen people play Asylum Visitor recently, which is exciting. I think that card's awesome.
Yeah, that card's really good, and I think we'll see more and more play as time goes on, just from the fact that, like, in Liliana Mirrors, it kind of breaks it open.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right.
Let's continue down the list to number 14, Cord of Calling. Now, you put this card at 14. I think you actually put it at 13 originally, but I think I moved it one spot.
Here's the deal. All
right, go
Everything
ahead.
That Coco does, Cord of Calling has been doing since the beginning of the format. Everything that Birthing Pod did, Cord of Calling was right next to it doing it since the beginning of the format. This is the best.
Not when Birthing Pod was legal.
Yeah, it was. Birthing Pod played 4 Cord of Calling, 4 Birthing Pod.
Really?
Yeah, the entire time.
God, I guess I just have a hard time. I have selective memory or something.
The thing is, it's always overshadowed by some other card that seems like the bigger thing, because there's always a more powerful thing, but consistently, time and time again, like, that deck exists. That is a Cord of Calling deck. Every card that's been added to it is just, like, the supplemental, this is the value engine that's going to be the more powerful, flashy thing. But Cord of Calling, like, makes every one of those decks possible. And on top of that, it makes the Kiki Cord decks possible. Like, all of those Kiki Jiki versions that are still around are possible. Now, with Eldritch Evolution, like, Cord and Eldritch Evolution and the Kiki is, like, the new spin on that. And Coco's not in that deck. Cord is going to be in these kind of decks forever. It's the reason Wall of Roots is even on this list, is this card.
It's true.
Like, this card is... it's the best tutor in the format by, like, on our list, and, like, I would argue it for days.
Yeah, it's good. It's really hard to find good creature tutors in Modern, though they seem to be printing more and more of them now. Traverse the Uvenwald and Eldritch Evolution to go with this.
And it puts it into play.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, if this put it in your hand, it still would be really, really, really good. It puts it into play.
It's appropriately costed, too. It's a well-balanced
yeah,
card.
I don't have a problem with it. It's very powerful.
All right, number 13, the premier removal spell for Jund. Uncounterable, black, green, instant. It is Abrupt Decay. Abrupt Decay that can't hit Master of Waves, can't hit Leyline of Sanctity.
Well, it's interesting because literally the Modern format is made out of 4-drop 3/4s because Abrupt Decay and Lightning Bolt together. Like, Glenn, in the first couple episodes of the podcast, we talked about Birthing Pod and... how much worse it would have been as a card if it was just 3 mana.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, if it was a 3 mana card that you lost 2 life when it came into play, like, or just a 3 mana card that didn't lose you life, it would have been a way worse card in the format because Abrupt Decay would kill it.
Yeah, definitely.
The fact that, like, just Abrupt Decay kills so many things below 3 mana, and it was kind of the interesting play with Splinter Twin. It was always kind of the opposite argument to the argument we made time and time again. Like, Splinter Twin made it so 3-drop sorcery spells were unplayable, but Abrupt Decay, or 3 or more drop spells, Abrupt Decay made 3 or below drop spells so unplayable. And I think that's why, like, Knight of the Reliquary is so low. I think that's why 3 drops specifically have such a huge problem.
Yeah.
2 drops and below, Abrupt Decay kills, but you're kind of equidistant on how much mana spent on it.
Yeah.
And 4 drops aren't killed by Abrupt Decay. So, like, 3 drops are the one spot where they're coming ahead on mana, they're coming ahead in value. And
yeah.
So if you're not getting immediate value off your 3-drop in a big way, you're just going to get blown out by either Abrupt Decay or Lightning Bolt. And that's a problem. That hurts the format. That hurts you.
Big time.
Hurts that card from seeing play in the format.
Let's just stick with the giant Abzan Jund. The Abzan Jund package here of the second tier, which is next card, number 12, the best planeswalker in the format, Liliana of the Veil. You guys might be a little surprised. This is only number 12. I'm not even thinking about it. It's even a little low. But the cards at the top are just ridiculous. So Liliana of the Veil.
This to 12.
What?
You moved this to 12.
Oh, it was like number 9, I think, when you made the list. But there's a couple things that I just thought had to be higher. The things that are higher make sense to be higher. This is Liliana of the Veil at number 12 is like when you guys hear the 11 cards ahead of it, you're going to be like, yeah, I can't really argue that hard. It's the best planeswalker. It's everything we talked about. Karn, but it's the best card in Innistrad. Well, it's the second best card in Innistrad. It's just good, right? Three mana planeswalkers have been heralded as incredible largely on the back of this card, right? This is the best 3 mana planeswalker.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
This is the best planeswalker in Modern. It's the second best planeswalker ever.
Yeah. So, yeah. It is the best 3 mana planeswalker. I guess, like, Dak Faden in in Vintage is probably better there than Liliana is here, but you're stealing Mox's in Vintage.
Yeah, Dak's awesome. I mean, I love the design on some of these new ones. I love Duretti in Conspiracy.
All the new Conspiracy ones are so cool. Kaya Ghost Assassin is one of the cooler cards I've ever played against. It does so many interesting things all by itself.
The blue red Saheeli Rai, I think it's called, 3-drop.
Saheeli is awesome.
Looks awesome.
Go infinite all the time. But back to Liliana. This is I've gotten my best placements off Liliana on the back of this card. I mean, like, the best one was in Legacy when I was dark ritualing into Liliana the Veil on turn one, which is one of the most brutal things you can do to a person. But just Liliana, if she comes into play and they answer it, fine. You got them to discard a card and you discarded a land or you killed one of their creature. Liliana of the Veil, if she stays in play, wins you the game by herself, period.
Do you remember Roger Ragosa?
No.
From Roger, who used to play like Sunday Legacy at Idaho?
No.
It wasn't even like really Legacy.
Well,
it was that like era that I was playing Legacy for a while. And I played my turn one Delver with Days in Hand and like passed. And he played like Swamp, Dark Ritual, Liliana, and I like dazed it. It's just like this just like felt so good, and he just like slumped in his chair so hard.
Yeah, I learned from an early day that daze out of just wait a turn against Team Delver. But no, I mean, there's not a whole lot more that could be said about this. The one last thing is, you know, the secret. We did an entire episode on this card. That's how defining this card is to the format.
Yep. Right?
So go listen to that episode.
Yeah. So let's move on to number 11. The most ubiquitous thing in the entire format, Shocklands. The single most played variety of land, though we have obviously fetch lands higher. surprise.
I don't know how to
just look up Steam Hollow Fountain. Or Hollow Fountain's fine. I would say maybe fetches are more ubiquitous because they're played at a higher number.
Well,
but
so
this is
my originally had this as 11. I think it kind of kept in that place because as far as land cycles, yes, we could have just done fetches. Then this is the top two cards. But in reality, most decks play at most five, and in reality, around five to maybe seven. Where shocklands are like there are 12 shocklands or fetch lands in every deck, and then like five shocks. And like yes, if we got rid of shocks, fetch lands get way worse, but how much you need them is less ubiquitous to me than other things. And what they do is less unique.
Yeah.
Especially with the new ones. Like the fact that there are new ones on top of that, mana would be way worse without shocklands, but like you could still do that shock mana fetch base.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's interesting.
Do you think we would at this point in the format with those new, shocks having the, not shocks, but the new tribal, the searchable lands, the ones from battle, mm-hmm. the Tanglelands. If the second half of the Tanglelands are printed and you ban Shocklands, do you think that the format would get worse? Do you think people would play less mana bases with like, or do you think it would just kind of turn into what standard was, which is just like a lot of simpler mana bases with like a decent enough amount of basics, a lot of fetches, and then those new lands?
I have no idea. I can't predict what that world would look like. That's such a massive change to the format that it's hard for anyone to say what that would look like.
Let's move on.
Business. All right.
To number 10?
Yeah.
Were you about to sing the Mulan song to defeat the Huns?
Yeah. I love that song.
Comes up a lot. I've even sang that song in interviews with like famous people.
Yeah.
Like, no. Everyone loves that song.
Everyone loves that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's on my list of like top three Disney songs ever.
In that
the Be a Man. Yeah. That one. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. So good. Before we do, we're at our top 10. I'm gonna post on Twitter that we're.
I'm gonna post the list, and then we're gonna open this pack.
No, top 10.
Yeah, I think we should open it to break up
before the top 10.
Before the top 10.
Yeah, while we post this,
should we pause really quickly?
Yeah, I think we're fine.
Well, let's pause it so we don't just waste people's time.
Oh yeah, on the top 10 cards in Modern. All top 10. Ever.
Wow.
Okay, we're talking. we've just done 90 cards.
We're a little exhausted.
We're a little tired.
But here we are.
We're
on
here
the
for
final
you,
10.
People on the podcast, on the live stream, on the internet, in the room. There's no one in the room. All right.
Number 10.
Number 10.
Starting with.
I wonder what's going to be.
A 0/1 green creature for one mana with Exalted.
Is
that
it
taps for green, blue, or white. Commonly played in many decks. Called.
Hierarch. No one understands. It's Noble Hierarch.
Noble Hierarch.
That was bad. All right. Ben's Batman voice is unimpressive for a guy named whose last name is, for all intents and purposes, Batman. Noble Hierarch is the defining Lunar Elf of the format. It's like, we have Birds of Paradise lower. I mean, like, Infect. You want to talk about the Infect card you want in the top 10. Here's your Infect card in the top 10. It's in Abzan Company. It was in Birthing Pod. Since the beginning of this format, every type of Bant deck, if there's a Knight of the Reliquary, you're probably seeing one of these guys. If you're seeing Collecting Company, you're probably seeing, like, this card, format defining. I like to say that there is a one drop for each color that is, like, the thing that represents that color in the format of Magic, and Noble Hierarch is green's one drop.
So you have, if you're without in that, to that.
Well, we'll talk about the other four as we continue, because those are all, they're all in the top 10.
Oh, you don't mean a creature.
No. They're like one mana spell
that represents the
color.
I thought you were talking like red would have been
Goblin Guide. If it's creatures, it'd be green is Noble Hierarch, red is Goblin Guide,
blue is Delver.
Black is.
Does black even have a one drop that gets played? Viscerous Seer.
It'd be Viscerous. Yeah, it would be. That's exactly what it is. Viscerous Seer. And white is
Mother of Ruins.
yeah.
White is Soul's Attendant. Soul's Attendant. Oh, Step Links?
Yeah.
No, that's like not. That's not
it's
real.
It's not real, though. Okay. All right. Noble Hark, it's sweet. Let's move on. Okay. So this is you kind of forced me. I think this is what you switched with the Liana, actually.
Well, I felt that this card needed the respect that you weren't giving it. And that's number 9, guys.
I feel like it deserved to be right at 19 next to Birthing Pod. But, okay.
This is so much more of a dominant card. Guys, Splinter Twin. Splinter Twin won the first Modern Pro Tour. Splinter Twin continued winning Pro Tours. Its win percentage of, as a deck, its win percentage across the board was so high for so long.
It's like the Michael Jordan. And like Birthing Pod is the Kobe Bryant of
for so long.
Reference, guys, we should all be so proud of me.
And there's a lot that's changed. If you've listened to our top 10 episodes, things have sort of evolved because we had this unwillingness. There was like an unwillingness on my end to put cards that didn't feel intrinsically powerful onto lists. And Kessler's argument was always like, if it's made an impact on the format, then it deserves to be on the list. So that's kind of what happened on our top 10 red cards episode. You'll notice that Deceiver Exarch and Pestermite did not make the list.
Fact. Scalding Tarn has won every Modern Pro Tour.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Well, it's good it's on our list. Splinter Twin to me is just, it represented so much of what I thought was great about Modern for so long before the banning, which is why I think an unbanning could be healthy at some point. It just depends. But it's a sorcery speed, do nothing four drop that just combos with other cards in the format to create the ultimate win condition. But just so happened to combo with cards that fit the bill of flash speed 3 mana, that it was like you couldn't win before turn 4 unless you spirit guided. But like,
no, you couldn't spirit guide. You could win up before turn 4 if you played a Bird of Paradise.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So you could win on turn 3, but it like took you to
a
jump
lot
through.
Of effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just always thought Splinter Twin was the card, and so to me, on every level, Splinter Twin deserves to be very high. It doesn't deserve to be the top card or top 3 or 4, but the cards ahead of it all have a very, very, very clear claim to fame.
Sure.
So Splinter Twin at number 9 feels fair to me.
All right, number 8. And this is a very obvious shoo-in for the blue one drop spell.
As we have said,
as sad as I am that it's not pre-ordered in, we got Serum Visions. This is one blue, draw a card.
What's your common
scry 2?
What's your common thing you like to say? It's not the hero that we need, is hero we
It's Batman. It is literally as bad as Serum Visions. I'm better than you.
I wasn't trying to do Batman.
Do Serum Visions. Say Serum Visions is Batman.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Serum Visions is the hero we deserve, not the one we want.
Yeah.
I think is what I say. There's a better way of saying that. Whatever. All right. Basically, it's the best cantrip in the format. It should be Preordain. I've talked very recently about how I think Preordain... Serum Visions leads the format to be more aggressive because it is much better earlier, so you want to be the things that you're doing it to have a better effect earlier in the game.
Yep.
Versus Preordain, which is a card that lets you play it later and have an effect off of it that's powerful.
Yep.
But beyond that, it's obviously really good. It's a 4 of, and like it took a long time for people to realize that you should just be playing 4 of this if you're playing blue, period. Like, you're just probably wrong for not playing 4 of this card.
Yeah.
Also,
it's a card that has been talked about a lot. It's like, more decks should just play Serum Visions to just play it. Like, not even decks that are, like, trying to fill their graveyard or, like, set their library. It's just, like, it just makes your, usually just makes your game plan better. Like,
yeah.
Generally speaking.
All right. Number 7.
Moving down
this is the
list.
This is the highest affinity card on the list. and a favorite of one player in this room.
And proof that we are that.
It may be our unofficial mascot of the podcast.
Spellskite.
Spellskite.
Spellskite is bad? Yeah. That doesn't even make sense. There's not even a metaphor there.
Spellskite didn't make number one, guys. Are you surprised? Surprise.
Yeah, no, Spellskite obviously is great. Beyond Ben's infatuation with it, it's the best sideboard card in the format. Every deck plays it. You should play two of them in every sideboard, period.
I don't think it was on your top 10 artifacts list. Or if it was like number 9 or something.
It was like number 9.
It's so funny looking back on that. It's the number 7 all-time modern
card.
There
is a Mad Magic where I tell everyone that they should pick them up at $2. And I was right.
They're like 40 now?
Yeah.
Like 40 now? Yeah, it's unbelievable. The card's just sweet. The reason the card's so good in modern. Yeah, as a main deck card, it's a little less good than it used to be without Splinter Twin. Splinter Twin was the ultimate, just like, ha 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 ha, I have Spellskite in play. You need to do something better.
Yeah.
but it's also still really good against Infect. It still is really good against aggro deck. That's good against Burn. It's a 0/4 for 2 that has an insane ability that can be played in. Any
it's good
deck.
Affinity. It's good against Boggles. There's so many things that it's like decent against, and there's something that's great with
Boggles, not Noggles. Look at you, all grown up. Let's
One day they'll bring Noggles back. Yeah. The donkey people of Florwyn, and they'll do something.
Spellskite.
There's only one Boggle in Boggles.
Spellskite's one of my 5 favorite cards ever printed. Let's continue moving down the list to the best creature ever printed, in my opinion. Even though it's not as high on this list because we could not come to the consensus ranking, Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah, you can't. Every card above Snapcaster Mage is better than. I mean, like, it's not. Yeah, no. I mean, Snapcaster Mage is great. We don't have to argue how good. Like, the problem with the top 10 list is all these cards are just like, yep, that's just like the best card. Like, if all the other cards weren't in the format, this is probably like one of these cards would just be the best card. Every one of these could be the best if there wasn't the ones better than it.
Snap is insane. Snap is the versatility it offers in its cost. The ability to flash in a 2/1 beater on turn 2 if you don't feel the need to hold on to it for late game. The fact that it's a wizard. The fact that it just combos so well with so many things. It's such a good card. I mean, it's so good. And this was not a card people missed. This was Tiago Chan's invitational card, and when this card was spoiled, people went nuts. This was right in the beginning when it was first spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing was, things are different now when cards are spoiled because Modern exists. When Snapcaster was spoiled, I don't think Modern existed yet. I think that was right before Modern's inception. So it was sort of like, in Standard, this probably will be really good, but in Modern...
A year before?
Yeah, maybe. It sounds like right around that time that Modern was made. Like, I think Modern became a format like... Right around the same time.
Modern came a format right before RTR block came out. And that's right. You're correct.
So, Innistrad was right before. Yeah. So, when you see this card for Standard...
But I mean, like, Stoneforge... Snapcaster Mage was, like, a Legacy staple, obviously. And Legacy, at this point, also... Like, the Magic community wasn't big enough where Legacy was as unattainable as it is now. Or, like, was basically a format that couldn't be supported as it is now. So, like... Snapcaster Mage was very obviously just like, oh, this card's bonkers.
Yep.
This card's very good. And this is also, you're forgetting Extended, an old, new, this is the summer of new Extended, just ended.
Yeah, right. They just changed it for that 1 year.
That 1 year.
Which didn't work at all.
Didn't work yet. And Snapcaster Mage would have been great in that format, because it's really good.
So, continuing down the list, Snapcaster...
The last cheat. It's the last cheat that we did. We didn't cheat on this one.
Yeah.
We did cheat.
Number 5.
And these are the black. This is the black one drop. Both of them.
Yeah. Thoughtseize/Inquisition of Kozilek. The reason that you have to put these two cards in the same slot is because the conversation about both of them is exactly the same. Thoughtseize is better in some cases. Inquisition is better in some cases. Most of the time you see a 3-3 split. It's not that often you see a full 8.
You see a 3-3 split, a 3-2. Rarely do they have the full 8. Sometimes you have a 4-3.
Yeah.
It's like...
I've seen people do when people get into the format and want to go really extreme, they go 4-4. Like Eric, when he built his deck, was like, I'm going 8-1. But like,
I'm currently in general playing 4-3.
Oh, you like 7?
I'm heavier on Thoughtseize than Inquisition.
It usually depends on the format. That's the thing. It's just like some formats.
Before that, I needed more Inquisitions, and I like because the format has left 3 drops behind a little bit with Through the Breach decks. Like, I needed to make sure I could handle Tron and Through the Breach.
They're good always. They're good in your opener. That's like with Thoughtseize is like the thing you want in your opening hand the most amount of the time. Like as sideboard cards, they're great. They're a good reason to have black in your deck at all because Thoughtseize is maybe the best sideboard option.
The amount of decks that I've built where I put 4 Thoughtseize on the sideboard.
Yeah.
Like where it's just like I'm building a dredge deck and I just want to have a game plan, but like on game 2 I need to interact, and Thoughtseize is just such a decent catch-all that it's worth bringing
it's
to 4.
It's the single best sideboard card you could ask for because it answers everything.
You're not playing it in the main deck, yeah, but it's
it doesn't
it's
answer
better,
It doesn't answer Tron that well, I guess, because they want to draw their things later and they will draw into them and you can't get lands.
The with Splinter Twin before, this is our Force of Will. These are Force of Will and Days.
Yep.
In the sense that Force of Will is this big policeman in Legacy to make sure people can't do unfair things all the time without some ramifications.
Right.
Thoughtseize is what that is in Modern.
Yep. Continuing down the list, we get to number 4.
Path to Exile.
Path to Exile, number 4.
The white one-drop spell.
Yeah, I mean, Path to Exile. Again, when we start to get these top cards, we've done 100 episodes of the show. You guys have heard us talk about these cards so many times. Path to Exile is just like bonkers.
It kills everything. Kills everything. Kills it dead forever. There's not coming back. I don't think I've ever, like... The only time Path to Exile feels bad is when you cast it on a 2/2 on turn 2.
Right.
Because, like, basically giving them target player discards a guard rampant growth doesn't feel very good.
Right.
But anytime after that, it's a great card.
I mean, for as much smack as we talk about white, the top 20 has... Path to Exile, the top 20 has Lingering Souls, and the top 20 has Kitchen Finks.
But Kitchen Finks is also half a green card. Like if
Lingering Souls white is good was taken out of the black format, flashback often.
Yeah, like those are two gold cards. So there's one white card in the
straight
top 20.
White card. Yeah, it's true. Path to Exile.
Even if you go in the top 30,
do you think that Swords?
It's still in the top 30. It's the only white card in the top 40. It's the only white card.
Do you think Path to Exile
top 50?
Do you think Path to Exile could be Swords to Plowshares in Modern, or do you think that's too good?
Swords to Plowshares is
better?
Very strong.
How much better?
Much better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, continuing down the list, number 3, we have the actual creature on the list.
I still haven't found another straight up white card, and I'm in the top 60. 70.
Number 3, the actual best creature on the list, Tarmogoyf.
Yep.
Best creature ever printed by most people's estimation. We've talked about Tarmogoyf and told the story.
It's the best creature ever printed that's a creature. So, like, Snapcaster Mage isn't a creature.
Yeah, true.
Hermit Druid's not a creature. Emrakul, for all intents and purposes, isn't a creature. It's a I win. So, like, for... The fact that this is the best creature ever printed that does the best creaturing, like it just attacks your opponent. It's a big, dirtily creature. It's a vanilla card for all intents and purposes that just has a variable toughness and power.
Yep.
It's just the best one ever printed. It's so, like, other than how complicated his ability is, from a, like, perfect card standpoint, it's, like, up there in how elegant it is. Because it's literally just a vanilla creature. It's like a French vanilla creature. Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, we've told a lot of stories about this card on the cast. I've told the story plenty of times where it was in the back of my trade binder and I traded two of them away for like $2 each in the first month Future Sight was legal.
It's crazy how this card hasn't been outclassed.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're printing a card that's usually a 4 or 5 quickly for 2, it's not a rate they want to push. Like, they'll push rate, they'll push 3/3 for 2, and we've seen them push 4/5 for 3.
Would a 3/4 for 2 that... draws a card when it comes into play be better than Tarmogoyf?
A 2/3?
A 3/4.
Oh, a 3/4 for 2.
Yeah.
That draws a card.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be better.
Okay.
I think, right?
I don't know. Tarmogoyf gets to be a 5/6 at some point and very quickly, and sometimes an 8/7, 8/9. If you, like, go full bore and there's a tribal card somewhere.
I think that a 3/4 that draws a card is better because Tarmogoyf gets thwarted so easily by Graveyard Hate, whereas, like, a 3/4 for 2 that draws you a card is just, like a 3/4 for 2 that draws you a card. It seems nuts.
I mean, Voice Resurgence currently isn't on our top 100 list, and it is a little bit of a 2/2 for 2 that draws a card and plays a much better creature. But, yeah, okay, so moving on. Or not moving on. Tarmogoyf is just great. I mean, like, all these cards are insane. I can't impress enough how, like, every one of these cards would destroy Standard by itself.
Tarmogoyf's an expensive enough card too that it's like
I don't know if that's true actually on Tarmogoyf. Tarmogoyf is, I always think Tarmogoyf would be fine in Standard.
Tarmogoyf's the card on this list where I feel like
it's
been
no graveyard strategies though in the entire format.
So Snapcaster at one point in Modern was like $20-$30 and the lands have jumped around and they've been cheaper, but Tarmogoyf's been like $100 plus ever since the format has existed. Mm-hmm. It's been
Splinter Twin wouldn't break Standard either. Sorry, continue.
So Tarmogoyf's that card that if you get in, sometimes like your buddies are playing all of theirs at the tournament, you can't get Tarmogoyf. So when you finally get a playset, you can like borrow or get them to play at a tournament. It's such a sweet feeling.
Oh yeah.
They're so good. It's no, just like
I'm so like the fact that I have them available to me. Tarmogoyf is the like similar to how Force of Will is a police, Tarmogoyf is also the Force of Will of modern in the sense that Force of Will is this big barrier to playing Legacy, where if you don't have a playset, there are so many decks that are unavailable to you.
Yeah.
But as soon as you have them, you can now play like half the decks in the format and like cheat on the lands a little bit. But yep. Force of Will is so much more important than like not playing with shocks. So like Tarmogoyf is kind of the same boat. It's like every green deck, unless you're like very specifically on the Coco train,
yeah,
like should be playing Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, even if you're on the Coco train, it still should be playing Tarmogoyf.
Because they don't have any spells. Yeah. They don't like, it doesn't get big. Number two. Now, number one and number two, I want to, you know, bets on what's number one and number two. We got two possible outliers. I wonder what they are. I'm giving time for the Twitch strat. I'm not going to wait. We're going to say it in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Fetch lands. Look at that. It was cute.
Yeah, we do that at the same time, guys. Yeah, this is the modern format in one card. If I had to pick, like, I think there's one card I think is better, more of that, I guess, but these like are so representative of
clearly one. There's one card that's more
yeah. The number one card in the history of the modern format.
Yeah,
I mean, wonder what it is. What one card have we not talked about?
What's the least played
Core Firewalker?
What's the least played fetch land? Is it Arid Mesa, Marsh Flats,
Red Blue? No, that's
you mean the most played
I think,
one ever?
I think it's easier to rate. So I think Red Blue is the best one. I think actually Green Black is the best fetch land, followed by Red Blue.
Oh, Bloodstained Mire is the least played, I think.
That's the black.
I think
red
Black
one.
Red is the least played.
Jun plays it though. Jun plays some. I think it's Red White.
Arid Mesa.
Yeah, Arid Mesa. It's more expensive than Red Green though, because of the
set.
Set. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean the fetches make everyone's mana possible and makes the format surround this three format thing with Shocklands. It's kind of this perfect world of like, you can't be too greedy because burn will just wreck people if you get too greedy.
Yep.
I do think that they're in general unhealthy to the format in some ways. And I think modern would maybe be better without them. In the sense that I think just the variety of what mana bases would look like would be different, and that'll allow people to be able to play the format a little bit more easily because they wouldn't have to only have these types of lands to play it. And on top of that, I think it would make it so two color decks were a little bit stronger because getting to three would be a bigger cost, and the amount of shuffling that happens every tournament is very high. But I don't think they're ever going away. I think that's just a not path. One of the reasons I don't like Blood Moon is because I think it makes you also have to play with fetches because you're incorrect by not doing so because you can't respond and get a basic with a fetch now. You have to just have the non-basic land you're playing. And so it kind of puts you in that dichotomy. But, you know, they're what the format's built on.
Yeah. I mean, the format wouldn't really exist without them. It would just be a different format. Things would feel drastically different.
I don't know how different they'd be. Like, how dominant three-color decks would probably be the biggest change.
Yeah.
We'd see a lot more two-color decks kind of doing their thing.
Well, speaking of two-color decks and many of them that play red, the most played card in the modern format, the most discussed card, the most discussed card on this podcast, the card that we use as our icon, if you guys didn't see it coming 100 cards away, Lightning Bolt is the best card in the history of the modern format.
The format is defined by it. I mean, like, every creature lives in... And it's, like, same as Abrupt Decay. Like, when I mentioned Abrupt Decay mattering about the fact that X4s or that like makes three drops unplayable. Three drops that don't have four, like creatures that don't have four toughness are also that same level. Like all the four drops that you see play have to have four toughness or have to come in with getting value. The only one I can think of is Olivia, and she only works because she can come out on turn six and become a four drop, an X4 in response to them kind of responding. Or other, like here in Pyrrhon, you get 2/1s out of it. So like your Lightning Bolt is less valid. The reason Lingering Souls is so good is because it's a four drop. It's a three drop that makes two, like it's a 2/2 that you pay that Lightning Bolt's terrible against. Like,
yeah, I mean, Lightning Bolt is, yeah, it's the definitive card. Like you, so much of the time, that's why things that cost 2 mana need to be so good, because if it costs 3 mana and it gets killed by Lightning Bolt, it's not playable. It's just, it sucks. Like it's not impossible.
That's not true. Like I think the new Thalia is a card that's a three drop that's playable even with this Lightning Bolt. And I know I went on a rant when we reviewed it.
Yeah, but think about when you start to get up to four drops, like it's, four drops are...
Yeah, you have to survive Lightning Bolt. Or you have to gain value in a way that makes the fact that they lightning bolt you not as big of a deal.
Yeah, so like Huntmaster gets you a 2/2 and
Kieran
two life.
Gets you 2/1s. The flyers. The Kalidus is a 3/4. Like it's kind of on that range. Like Planeswalker is kind of
you get an activation.
Like so many of it is like, can you survive lightning bolt? And that's the format. It's the best card in the format. All these other cards like exist around the ecosystem. Like that's why Kitchenfinks is so good. Kitchenfinks survives lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Snapcaster Mage is so good because it buys back lightning bolt. Like all these cards. Like you can even argue that like we have Serum Vision, not Serum Visions. What's your other Serum Visions? The
Sleight of Hand, Thought Scar.
So high because it can mill Lightning Bolt so that you can Snapcaster Mage the Lightning Bolt that you milled with Thought Scour. Like, the format is so built around. Spellskate is as good as it is because it's a counter to Lightning Bolt.
Bolt Snap Bolt. I mean, what more do you need to say?
That's like, theoretically, if we didn't name this podcast Masters of Modern because that name was conveniently available, like, Bolt Snap Bolt is not the worst name for a modern podcast or, like, website or content creation place. Like,
yeah, Bolt Snap Bolt.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's copyright that.
Yeah, none of you steal it on the live chat. I mean, I'm glad that we counted the top 100 cards. I'm going to go nap for an hour.
I know. I'm so tired now. That was it, guys.
Yeah, beyond that, like, more on our podcast and how happy we are. Like, thank everyone. First off, everyone on the live stream right now, thank you. Everyone who has listened to an episode at all ever since this podcast has started. I started this with Glenn Jones 2 years ago. Ben jumped on, you know, 3 weeks into it, 4 weeks into it.
Something like
that. For the first time. And like, I just wanted to talk about Modern. I love talking about Magic. That's why I kind of created this. It was kind of a creative outlet. And like, you know, you guys seem to enjoy it. You guys seem to keep wanting us to keep talking about stuff. We love playing Modern, we love playing Magic, we love talking about Magic, and we hope you guys enjoy what we're doing. Hopefully in year two, we'll be expanding in cool directions, kind of trying to do some new stuff, and see what cool stuff we can come up with. The YouTube channel will be growing. Please go subscribe to the YouTube channel. I think actually I like streaming on YouTube more than Twitch through this podcast, just because it lets us build a following in a place that we're also doing other stuff versus Twitch, which screwed us today, so screw them.
No, we love Twitch, but yeah, it was definitely a bummer. Guys, I second everything Kessler just said, and he, while Kessler definitely created this before I was on board, I really feel that the last 90 some odd episodes we've done together, we found our groove, we found our stride. We've tried some things that have been more successful, some things that have been less. We always want to know from you guys what you want to see from us going forward. There's definitely room to grow, and we're going to be taking this in some new directions. We've tried some things out. If you guys want to see more Magic, if you want to like hear about more practical games, more pro interviews, maybe possibly more of a tournament report format, anything, you guys should really let us know what you like, because that's ultimately the next 100. What the show is going to end up being is more of a response to that. I mean, we can do top 10s and set reviews all we want, but ultimately we love talking about Magic, and it helps know what you guys want to hear.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an important thing for us. Thank you so much for tuning in today and walking through the whole top 100 with us. We tried hard to make the list reflective of the way we feel about the format and really make sure we didn't misassign cards too greatly. I think there was probably a couple whiffs, but nothing too crazy for us.
I think the biggest
Ink
Moth Nexus
was the biggest one.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll agree with you.
Cradle Planning could have been a little higher, and there's I'm very confident in most of our tens.
Yeah,
like these 10 cards belong here. I'm not convinced on the exact order of some of those tens, so please take them more as blocks of cards.
Probably Ink Moth deserved to be like 20 plus slots higher.
Yeah, yeah. The Ink Moth is like a thing that we like swung into the wrong direction.
Yeah,
and like, I think that probably happened when we were just trying to get everything into it. And
yeah.
Once again, thanks everyone.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that was awesome.
Did we do the follows on
Twitter? No, do the whole thing. Follow us at the MMCast on Twitter. Find the MMCast on Facebook, patreon.com/TheMMCast. You can find MMCast pretty much everywhere. This Twitch channel that didn't work for us today, the MMCast. Subscribe on YouTube. You can find us personally.
Yeah, Talk Decking TV.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Kess Wiley on Instagram, Twitter, Sony PlayStation Network, everywhere, and actually Twitch. I do have a Twitch stream that I've been playing Final Fantasy X like twice a week and kind of running my way through that, which is basically, it's basically Zendikar Block. It's like the exact same storyline.
And then we have, yeah, we have
follow the command zone. Make sure to follow us on Facebook.
Yeah, and thank yous to all of the guests, all of the pros, everybody that's come on. I mean, just unbelievable stories.
Thanks to Wizards. I mean, we'll have a spoiler card this week. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Make sure to come check us out. We'll post it at the beginning of this episode audio-wise, and we'll probably post a video separately because we now ended up live streaming on YouTube of the a separate video of us just talking to the camera, giving away the spoiler. So make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel to kind of check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll
talk to you soon.
Talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.